शिला गुरुदेव की जाय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जाय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जाय, श्री श्री देवजी गोपाल की जाय, ग्रंथरा श्रीमद भागवतम की जाय, श्री वेणुगीत की जाय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जाय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। सो प्रणाम, वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू। वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग विथ our series of Sri Venugita. Today is 11th meeting, and we will be studying the 10th verse. So we will be reaching the half of the whole chapter, which consists in 20 verses, chapter 21 of 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But as usual, first of all, let's make a brief recap of the verse we studied some days ago in our last meeting. Verse that Sanatana Goswami is mentioning, it was spoken by Sri Radha herself, in which she is basically mentioning how the Benu is stealing the nectar, the adharamrita, the nectar of Krishna's leaf, which is actually belonging to them, to the gopis. But the flute is drinking it all, basically, not leaving anything for the gopis. No? So, without leaving any remnants, as Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur will say, by thievery, utterly alone, Venu being male, and drinking the adharamrita of another male, and the gopis having to hear the ecstatic cries of pleasure of the Venu drinking the whole thing in the distance, and they are not able to even grasp a little remnant of that. Also, they call Damodar. So mentioning, we know Krishna since he was Damodar, since the Damodar Lila, we have rights to on his affection towards us. So part of that Venu Nada, the adharamrita of Krishna's lips, belongs to us. Actually everything, but at least a part. I mean, at least the Venu should give a part, if you will. And in that context, of course, Radha exhibits the sattvic bhava of envy, transcendental envy towards the flute. Some commentators will mention that they asking Radha, along with her gopis, asking which tapasya did the flute perform to be born as a flute, because on one side, you could say, for someone to be born a flute, you must not do anything pious to be born as a piece of bamboo. You just have to be a rascal, and there you have birth as a tree or something. But this bamboo is just drinking 24/7 the nectar of Krishna's lips, so something extraordinary must be there. So let's find out which tapasya the Venu did, which guru he studied under, which shastra she studied, all this. Let's go to the chart of the Venu and study that, so we can do whatever arrangement we have to do in order to be born as a flute in our next birth. And she concluded the verse mentioning, in the context of herself showing envy towards the flute, she will say, not only that, not only the Venu is taking everything for himself, but even if something remains, he is giving that to his forefathers. The bamboo trees and the river. The river is like the mother of the bamboo tree, giving her milk-like water to feed the bamboo trees from which the bamboo is extracted for making the Venu. So it is said that both the river and the trees are exhibiting different ecstatic symptoms. Sri Radha is seeing all this by seeing the great fortune of their descendant, basically. They have not had the chance of being on Krishna's lips, but their descendant is doing that. So by extension, they are having that good fortune, basically. So, brief words. We saw that in our last meeting. So today we will move on to the next verse. From now on, the gopis will... each verse of the Venu Gita, mostly all of them, will focus on a particular species in Braj. So today the main turn, or more than one, but the main turn here will be the land of Braj itself, as well as the peacocks and some other animals which will be mentioned there. But mostly that will be the central scene. Peacocks ecstatically dancing according to the sound of the flute. So let's recite the verse. I think you have it there. So it says like this. We continue with the same meter, Vasant Tilak. Vrindavanam sakhi bhuvo vitanoti kirtim yadhevaki sutapadam bhujalabdha lakshmi govinda venu manumatamayuranityam prekshadrisanvavaratanyasamastasatvam. So translation. O friend, Vrindavan is spreading the glory of the earth, having obtained the treasure of the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Devaki. The peacocks dance madly when they hear Govinda's flute, and when other creatures see them from the hilltops, they all become stunned. So, this is verse number 10 of Sri Venu Gita. Let's go briefly word by word, and then trying to unpack its meaning. So, first line says, Vrindavanam sakivubo vitanoti kirtim. So, first word, Vrindavan. Focus is the land of Raj. Vrindavanam means Vrindavan. So, Sakhi means what? Friend. Oh, friend. It's singular, which will have some meaning as well. So, Vrindavanam Sakhi Bhubo. Bhubo has to do with Bhu Devi, or the earth. So, the earth is introduced in the context of the land of Raj as well. Vitanoti Kirtim. So, Vitanoti means expands. And the word be, as we will see, is always has to do with this idea of vishesh, with in a special way. So it expands in a special way. What? Kirtim. Kirtim means like the glories or the fame. So Vrindavan is spreading the glories of Mother Earth, basically. It would be the first idea of the first line. This Vrindavan is spreading the glories of the earth by being in the earth. By Vrindavan being located in planet Earth, the glories of planet Earth are showcased. Why? Someone may ask. At this point, may be still not aware of why Vrindavan may. Yadeva ki suta padam buja labdha lakshmi. Second line replies that. Yat means because Devaki suta, which is a name for Krishna, the son of Devaki, and we will clarify why the gopis are calling Krishna the son of Devaki. We are in Vrindavan at this point. So, Padambuja Labdha Lakshmi. So, Pada Ambuja means from the lotus feet, Labdha Lakshmi. So, Labdha Lakshmi means whose opulence or beauty, in this case, Lakshmi, was obtained. So, basically, by having the son of Devaki walking with his lotus feet on its land, Vrindavan, its beauty was obtained, basically. Vrindavan obtained, in other words, the treasure of the feet of Krishna, basically. And that's why the earth is glorious by having Vrindavan, and by having Krishna in Vrindavan, by implication. So, then the author of this verse, of the speaker of this verse, describes a further scene. It says in the third line, Govinda Venum Anumatta Mayura Nanityam. So, Govinda Venum. Venum means, I hope at this time we all know what Venum means. So the flute of Govinda, Govinda's flute, Govinda Venum. Anu means after. So after hearing which, after hearing that flute, what happens? Matta Mayura Nanityam. So Matta Mayura means, Mayura in this case means peacocks. It's another word for peacock. There are many. And Matta means maddened or intoxicated. Or like Matta Hari, the maddened elephant. Or Hari Matta, sorry. So, Matta Mayura means intoxicated or maddened peacocks. Nritim. Nritim means dance. So by hearing this flute of Govinda, the peacocks become intoxicated and start dancing. So we are moved into a particular scene. First, Vrindavan is described and its glorious position on Mother Earth. Inside that Vrindavan, we have Govinda playing flute and the peacocks reacting in this particular way. And as if this is not enough, the last line says, Prekshyadri sanva bharatanya samasta sattvam. So, Preksha, after seeing such a thing, after seeing how the peacocks are dancing according to Krishna's flute, which preksha also can mean which is worth seeing. So the two things can be implied. After seeing such a thing which is so worth seeing, adrishano, on the summits, you say in English? On the top of the hills, adri means hill, and sano means in this case, like on the top of the hills, avarata anya samasta sattva. So anya samasta says, anya means other, samasta means all, and sattva in this case means living entities. Avarata means stunned. So by seeing this spectacular situation of the peacocks dancing and Krishna playing the flute, from top of the hill, all other living entities are contemplating that situation and becoming stunned. While the peacocks are dancing with Krishna, all the other species in Braj are seeing from the terrace of the hilltops and becoming, entering into stamba, or a form of ecstasy, which means not being able to move and so on. So that's a word by word meaning. And again, remember which is the theme or the general mood in the Venu Gita. Gopis are projecting their own Baba outside and seeing everyone has love for Krishna, everyone is more fortunate than us. Let's see what we can do to be born as whoever is the main character of each verse. No? Before it was the flute, let's see now. There is a connection between verses. Try to maintain also this like theme line. No? So in the previous verse, remember, Sanatana Goswami said this verse was spoken by Sri Radha. She was lamenting about how the flute was plundering it all and seeing what we can do to be born as a flute or something like that. So in this particular verse, Srila Sanatana Goswami will mention this verse spoken by Lalita Sakhi, who is Radha's closest friend, if you will. And that's why in this verse the word Sakhi comes in singular. Like implying, whoever is speaking this verse is replying, was speaking to one Sakhi, to one person in particular, who is the one who spoke the previous verse, who is Sri Radha. In other verses, we maybe you remind the terms Gopyaha or Sakhibhyo, all that is plural. All friends, all gopis, like they're addressing a whole group. But in this particular verse, Sanatana Goswami says, Sri Lalita is addressing Sri Radha and is trying to, like to give support to her because she's lamenting so much in the previous verse because of her bad, so-called bad fortune and so on. So she's trying to pacify Sri Radha basically in this verse. That's one of the main services of Lalita. She herself is not generally too pacified, but she's very expert in trying to deal with that. So basically, she's trying to say to Sri Radha, you are lamenting, you consider yourself not fortunate, but actually the whole rulership of this Vrindavan has been bestowed to you. You are Vrindavaneshwari, you are the queen of Braj. And look, this Vrindavan is so glorious because it's making the earth so, and all this verse starts to unfold. No? This Vrindavan is making the earth so special, and this place, this is happening. So try to forget about the flute. And try to forget him. Him means the flute. Remember, the Venu is masculine. And try to remember her. Her means Braj, the land of Vrindavan, of whom you are the queen. So try to appreciate your good fortune. Something like that. No? Sometimes among sadhakas, one may say, do not lament unnecessarily in this stuff. Try to appreciate this. Of course, this is between siddhas, so it's another level, but similar dynamics we can find. So Sri Radha is older, Sri Lalita Devi is a little bit older than Sri Radha, to say that some days, less than a month more. But again, in Vrindavan, Balaram is 8 days older, he's the elder brother. So you just need a few days to be considered an elder and act accordingly in the dynamics of the Leela. So Lalita in this way is kind of an elder sister of Sri Radha, giving advice, chastising her even sometimes, for to speak of chastising Krishna and so on. So, but she's totally doing all that in the context of serving the two of them. There is a very nice verse composed, there's in one composition called Lalitashtakam, which is an astakam for Lalita. So the first verse is offering pranam to Sri Lalita Devi. And it is said that she her love is very high class to begin with. Now, she's described as a very high class loving personality. Indeed, the village where she lives, if you go to Vrindavan, is called Uchagao. Uchagao, and Ucha means high class, and Gao means village. So high class village. Here you find a very high refined type of prem. Lalita Devi is presiding over it. So it is saying this verse that Sri Lalita Devi is ready to appear in a lack of forms, in 1,000,000,000 forms, just to remove the minimum drop of perspiration that she may perceive in Sri Radha and Krishna. If she perceives one drop of perspiration in the divine couple, she's ready to take unlimited forms in order to clean that and relieve them of any type of anxiety or whatever you may like to heal. So by that disposition, this mantra says, she's able to have the two of them, Radha and Krishna, under her control. Srimati Lalita Devi Ki Jai. So she's the one here trying to give support to Sri Radha. So instead of speaking about the good fortune of the flute in Krishna's lips, stop with that topic. Let's move forward. Life goes on. They are starting to speak about the favorable or the fortunate position of Bhumi Devi, Mother Earth, which again has been graced by the touch of Krishna's lotus foot soles. But of course, some acharyas also, again, Sanatan Goswami is the one who is saying, Lalita Devi is saying that to pacify Sri Radha. Some other acharyas will say, one gopi, without mentioning the name, is seeing the good fortune of Vrindavan and saying, oh, let's be born as Vrindavan. Let's be born as some speck of dust here. Instead of, and one could say even Sri Radha may reply like that to Lalita. Lalita says, see the good fortune of Raj, and maybe Sri Radha will say, we are so unfortunate being born in these female gopi bodies. We don't have the chance of direct constant association with Krishna, but Vrindavan soil is having that opportunity 24/7 again. We are in the same situation. So, what to do? No? Hopefully, we can find what we can do to be born in that situation and therefore make our lives worthwhile. And Sri Radha crying. Again, another form of Krita Punja Punja. What must have that soil done to appear in that particular form? Of course, we are not speaking that someone was born as Vrindavan and before it was someone else or something, but in the madness of divine love, Sri Radha and the gopis in general will think in those terms. Like, how can I be born as the land of Raj? We have seen many prayers to that effect in that connection. And again, appreciating the good fortune around them, deprecating, is it in English, themselves in dainya, or a type of extreme humility that comes in prem, which is also one of the six symptoms of saranagati, karpanya, or dainya, which means humility. But when we say humility here, we say humility with all the letters, because sometimes we may think about humility and just try to get the most user-friendly version possible of that idea, the most accessible, immediate humility. I can fit in that level of humility. And it's okay. I mean, we cannot go paranoid in trying to force ourselves into the humility of, the Goswamis. But also it's nice to say, to not be like complacent and just, no, I know what's humility. I'm being humble, or I'm trying. We should always be willing to discover which are the ultimate reach and heights of humility. Again, not to be neurotic, but to have the spectrum of our progress and not be complacent and say, oh, I already reached that, so I'm humble enough. You know that humility is an anti-reflective quality. The more you affirm you have it, the less you have it, interestingly. Other qualities, you can recognize them. You can, go to the gym, have powerful biceps, you say? Biceps? And if you say, I have powerful biceps, I can lift this and that, it's not that by saying that you lose your biceps. No, still, you can do the same thing. No? But if you say, I'm humble, that's no longer true. That's how humility works. It's quite paradoxical. No? So, let's go a little bit to the different lines. Vrindavanam, then we already spoke about Vrindavanam, Bhubo Binatu Bitanati Kirtim. So Bitanati, remember, refers to expand, and B, the word B, has to do with Vaishishya or Vishesh, different words of speaking about the Vishesh or Vaishishya means special, in a special way. So the word B indicates Vrindavan's unique speciality. I mean, Vrindavan is quite special. In other words, the qualities of Vrindavan, the type of love, the inhabitants, because what's a place but its inhabitants? If you take away all the inhabitants, you no longer have the place in itself. It's just like a desert. But what's a place and its inhabitants and what they are feeling, what they are vibrating, that's what Vrindavan is about. So that's so special. Vrindavan is so special that it's even more special than Vaikuntha. Our Guru Maharaj usually describes Vrindavan as Maha Vaikuntha. Somewhere in Shastra this is mentioned. Vrindavan is Maha Vaikuntha, although overtly it seems Lagu Vaikuntha or Chotta Vaikuntha, like smaller than Vaikuntha. It seems so limited and small. Vaikuntha means without limits. But it's Maha Vaikuntha. It's bigger than Vaikuntha because the consideration is in terms of affection, as Guru Maharaj also mentions. Brahman seems unlimited, without form. Vaikuntha seems smaller than Brahman. Start to have forms and stuff like this, although you have four arms and things like that. But it's greater in affection than Brahman, and Vrindavan seems even smaller, but the affection is even bigger. So in that sense, Vrindavan is Maha Vaikuntha. It's the greatest Vaikuntha, which seems the smallest, but when you pay attention through the eyes of love, you see, oh, in affection, this is Maha, 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 basically. So B, Vishesh Tanoti, and Tanoti means, again, like spreading. So spreading. Bitanoti kirtim. Kirti means fame. Like kirtida. So Yashoda, similar. The two names are almost synonyms, interestingly. Yashoda, kirtida, the mothers of Krishna and Sri Radha. So Vrindavan is spreading the fame of the earth, basically, by being what it is, by showcasing the type of love that so much characterizes Braj, by spreading a unique type of love in its land, which is, and we could say, Vrindavan is expanding the glories of the earth, or the idea of expansion can be applied to the nature of the love in Vrindavan. The nature of the love in Braj is constantly expanding. And due to its ever new, fresh nature of constant expansion, the glories of the planet in which that Vrindavan is constantly expanding as well. So that's the nature of the love in Braj. No? Every single day, as we say, Krishna is more beautiful. Because why? Because he's more loved by the Brajavasis than yesterday. And the more Brajavasis love Krishna, the more his beauty increases. And the more Krishna's beauty increases, the more the Brajavasis serve in this position increases, because they have to serve that beauty. No? But Krishna becomes more beautiful by this love he's receiving from his devotees. Well, that's a very nice idea. He becomes further ornamented by the waves of affection that are coming to him. So both are entering, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will say, both Krishna and his devotees enter into this competition. Krishna's beauty, the devotees' love. Krishna's beauty, the devotees' love. The two of them are entering into a competition, and none of them accept defeat. Actually, that's ever expanding. That's why Krishna is all attractive. Means he's every day becoming more attractive. That means all attractive. It's not that he reached the top, he cannot become more attractive, but he's all attractive. No, all attractive means every day more attractive. And that has, again, the corresponding side with the love of those devotees who only live to serve that all attractiveness. That's the standard in Vrindavan. So again, this type of love, all expanding, ever increasing love, is non-existence anywhere else apart from Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is appearing on earth, as Guru Maharaj was speaking these days. Vaikuntha is not appearing on earth, but Vrindavan is appearing on earth. So that's a very unique feature of planet earth that is hosting, if you will, such a place. So, or another way also Acharyas had mentioned, it's not like necessarily that Vrindavan is spreading the fame of the earth, but Vrindavan's fame is spread throughout the earth. Which is similar but different. The fame of Vraj is expanded and spread throughout the earth. We are testimony of that. Guanacaste, Costa Rica. Well, this place has to do with Vrindavan, but somehow the fame of Vrindavan is being spread in different corners around the world. For example, Anguruma is speaking about that, no? Agasur Lila. So Krishna entered Agasur, and Agasur became so glorious by Krishna's entering his mouth. So what to speak, a place where Krishna not only enters for a moment, but resides perpetually. How glorious is that place, Vrindavan? Krishna visited the mouth of Agasur for a few minutes. Sarupya Mukti, and we are chanting the glories even of Agasur for weeks here. Just for Krishna visiting the place like for a minute. You go to India, you find these places. What's the name in Sanskrit? Like resting places. Baitak. So you go to Vrindavan or Mayapur, and you have, many. Chaitanya Baitak. So especially Mahaprabhu's Baitak. Baitak means like a resting place. And maybe it's a spot where Mahaprabhu, once it is said that he visited, he sat for 5 minutes to take rest and continue. But that's a whole portal there. And a whole monument is made and a whole temple. And you may think like, these guys are like exaggerating a little bit. I mean, he sat for 5 minutes. I mean, what's the event there? But we see the event. Krishna entered the mouth of Agasura for a few minutes and phew, such an event, such a glory. So again, Kaimutyanyaya, if that happens in that case, what to speak about that place where Krishna resides perpetually? Where Krishna, that place that Krishna never leaves, technically speaking. We will mention that eventually. Sanatana Goswami gave a nice, another definition of Vrindavan. The Goswamis give different definitions of Vrindavan, that place which everything is accommodated and things like this. But in this case, Sanatana Goswami says, Vrindavan means, he says, one who nourishes and protects everyone is called Vrindavan. So tomorrow when you see Guru Maharaj, you can call him Vrindavan. When you see a sadhu, Vrindavan. One who nourishes and protects everyone is called Vrindavan. Of course, in this particular case, referring to Vrindavan Dham, how it's nourishing and protecting through affection, basically. No? That's the main protection, if you will. And again, as we mentioned, this land is especially glorious because it's hosting the sacred lotus foot soles of Sri Hari, who is walking barefoot here and there all along the Braj. There's no corner he has not inspected. In every corner of Braj, there are the footprints of Sri Krishna, basically. So because of that, the land of Braj is even more glorious than Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, you will never see the imprints of Narayan feet. Because why? Because Narayan is wearing sandals, always. So you may see maybe the markings of the sandals, which is glorious enough, no problem. Some slippers, you say? So he's walking with the padukas. So you cannot see the markings of his lotus feet. He has the markings. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is going barefoot, mostly. As we see in the altar, there are some padukas there, but they are just on the side. No? Like Yashoda coming and telling Krishna, wear your sandals, you are going to the forest, you will be hurt, please wear. And Krishna like, they're there, okay. At some moments during the day, he may wear sandals for some specific occasion, maybe going to milk the cows or something, but generally speaking, especially here, he's in the forest, barefoot. So that's connected with the idea, Padambuja Labdha Lakshmi. The land of Vrindavan is receiving the fortune or the beauty is imprinted with the markings of Krishna's lotus feet. That's a fortune, that's a Lakshmi, a fortune that is not even found in Vaikuntha, which is the place where we find Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, Mahalakshmi. But Mahalakshmi is not receiving the fortune that the gopis say. receive. Udav say Nayam Sriyam Gaunitantarati Prasad Swaryositam Nalina Gandaru Chankuto Nirasot Savisya Bujadanda Grihita Kantalabdashi Samjaudagad Braj Sundarina. He's speaking about the great fortune of the inhabitants of Vrindavan and the gopis in particular. He's saying, oh, they were embraced by Krishna and Rasa Lila. This favor was not given even to Lakshmi. And Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. So if the goddess of fortune is not as fortunate as the gopis, I mean, you can imagine. So I would have said, and what to speak of the ladies of the denied heavenly planets or other ladies from this world, who according to mundane estimation are very beautiful. Nothing in comparison to the fortune of the Brajasundaris. So again, as we mentioned in some verses before, Swapada Ramanam, in the famous fifth verse. Swapada Ramanam, Krishna's entering the forest barefoot is creating a particular type of charm. So these are the glories of Braj. So many glories are there. If you want further detail, you can study works like Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati. There you have almost 2,000 verses in glorification of Vrindavan. 2,000. So that's quite a number. And again, what's the special glory of Braj? The type of prem that is there, and that prem makes Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna, and the Absolute in his most refined, intimate form, so much control and attracted and captured by that love, that he cannot leave Vrindavan, even for a moment. That's an important point that Rupa Goswami makes in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Vrindavanam parityaja sagachinnaiva gachati. Famous line, which means Krishna never puts a step out of Vrindavan. To that point, he says, Krishna never puts a step out of Vrindavan. Even when it seems he's leaving Vrindavan, that's just an expansion of him going, whatever, Mathura, Dwarka. But he remains in Vrindavan, in aprakat state, unmanifested. But he's there. He cannot go outside. So that's the glory of Raj. He is Krishna, so present there, so captured there, that, for example, Uddhav, when he, another prayer from that series, when Uddhav, as Guru Maharaj said, I think yesterday, he went to Vrindavan, he was so like thrilled. But the type of love, he found a new type of love, and therefore he found a new type of Krishna. Because Uddhav was Krishna's closest friend outside of Raj, in his form outside. And he thought he knew Krishna, no? Because you are Krishna's personal minister, secretary, friend, devotee. So many qualities Uddhav has, and he thinks, I know Krishna pretty well, we are quite close and intimate. But when he goes to Vrindavan, he finds a type of love which corresponds with his Krishna, but he realizes, this is not my Krishna. I mean, it's Krishna, but it's another Krishna. Because this love is another love. It's not the love I have for Krishna, but I cannot deny that they have love, and actually I cannot deny that their love is astonishing, overwhelming. So, which is that Krishna which corresponds with that love? So Uddhav is having this epiphany in Vrindavan by not only discovering a new type of love for Krishna, but a new type of Krishna that corresponds with that love. And that helps him to understand, oh, now I understand why at times he behaves like this and like that in Mathura, outside of Vrindavan. It's in connection to this reality that I didn't have a clue. As Guru Maharaj said, now I understand why Krishna sent me here. I thought I was coming to school then, but I'm being tutored by them, actually. And he remained for 10 months in Vrindavan, it is said by Raghunadas Goswami. And the Brajavasis took Uddhav in Parikram. First Brajamandal Parikram in history. Brajavasis taking Uddhav and showing him different lila stalis. Here Krishna did this, here Krishna did that, and everyone was totally absorbed for a year, like if Krishna was with them. So before leaving Vrindavan and returning to Mathura, Uddhav recites these famous six prayers, and one of them, he's praying basically, I want to be born as something in Vrindavan, as a shrub, you say? Shrub, here. Asamaho charanarinu jusammahamsyam vrindavanim kinapi gulmalato shadinam jadustyajam sajanam aryapatam tahitva bhijur mukunda padavim shruti bhir bimrigyam. So basically he's saying that, I want to be born as a little gulma, lata, like two forms of mind, one smaller than another. So I can enter in touch with the dust from the lotus feet of these gopis. So I somehow I can get like impregnated by the intensity of their devotion. They have left everything for him who is so difficult to attain even for the Vedas. So again, this is very glorious. Vrindavan is very glorious because, again, Swayam Bhagavan is residing there. Or we could say, Swayam Bhagavan is so glorious because he's residing there. No, we could make the two cases. Vrindavan is glorious because Krishna is there. Krishna is glorious because Vrindavan is there. Because the love of the Vrajavasis make him especially glorious, make him who he is. Again, you take out Vrindavan's Vrajaprem, you no longer have Vraja Krishna. Every form of the Absolute is carved with the chisel of a particular loving devotee who is making him take that particular shape, basically. So, let's continue. We have sharing some words about Vrindavan, the first part of the verse. And in this context, the name also Devaki Sutta comes. So let's share some words about why the gopis are calling Krishna Devaki Sutta. Because for the Vrajavasis, that's not their experience. For them, Krishna is not the son of Devaki. For them, Krishna is the son of Yashoda. They are not aware of the whole situation, background situation of Vasudev bringing Krishna from Mathura to Vrindavan. And even if we want to think that Krishna was born only in Mathura, although our Goswamis make the case for an expansion of Krishna was born in Mathura and that expansion merged into the Krishna born in Vrindavan, which again is a very Gaudiya type of insight. So Sanatana Goswami mentions in connection to the Devaki Sutta, say, well, here when the gopis say that, that's in accordance with the thing that Garga Muni say in Bhagavatam 10.8.14. Garga Muni, when Krishna's, he says to Nanda Maharaj, he said, for many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudev, which implies as the son of Devaki also. But interestingly here, Garga Muni is saying to Nanda Maharaj, appeared previously, like implying, it is your son, but he sometimes appeared as the son of Vasudev and Devaki. But also Sanatana Goswami said the word Sutta or son means that Krishna is Devaki's son only by birth. He connects with the word Prasuta. Prasuta means when you are the son of someone by birth only, but not in every sense of the term. Because again, you may be born from a lady, but for some reason you don't know who is your mother. I'm not saying this is the case, but someone else adopts you and becomes your mother. And maybe you meet, after 35 years, the mother that you were born from her womb, but at that point, you already have a mother. Still, that person is biologically your mother, that new mother, but your mother in a substantial sense is someone else. So Sanatana Goswami says, well, if you want to think in terms of Krishna being born of Devaki, okay, Prasuta means he was born from Devaki. But Putra, he used the word Putra, which is a more comprehensive way of speaking about being a son of someone. Like Putra means, I'm a son of that person, or I'm a daughter, or I'm a child of that person. So he says, he's actually Yashoda's son only. No, like, he's the son of Yashoda. He was born from Devaki, but he's the son of Yashoda. As we spoke the other day, Vrindavan, it's not that you have a relationship and then comes a type of love according to the relationship. But you have a type of love and then comes a relationship after that. Technically speaking, Krishna and Balaram are not brothers. If you analyze. But nobody thinks like that. Everyone will say, oh, Krishna and Balaram, they're brothers. Because that's the bhav. The technicalities will come after. Who he was born from and so on. You feel he's my brother, he's my brother. Even though if you say, no, but your parents are different. I don't care, he's my brother. So similarly here. Or, of course, another classical point is that Devaki is another name for Yashoda. That's mentioned in Shastra also. So Sanatana Goswami quotes Brihad Vishnu Purana, which says, Yashoda and Devaki are two names of Nanda's wife. that is Yashoda. Therefore, she, Yashoda, had a friendship with Sauri's wife. Sauri is the name for Vasudev. So Sauri's wife, Devaki. So he mentioned, because they had the same name, they were friends because of that also. Not only because of that, for sure. But there's this Shastric statement that also Devaki is the name for Yashoda. So we can take, when the gopis here say Devaki Sutta, actually they are saying Krishna, the son of Yashoda. And also, since we are speaking about names, the gopis say Govinda Benum. So again, now the name Govinda is coming in this verse. In the previous verse, remember Shirada said Damodar Adhara Sudama Pigopika. Damodar. Before previous verses, they were trying like to hide that, no? And speaking about the sons of the king of Raj, the two of them, but without names. Now Damodar, now Govinda comes. So why the name Govinda is coming here? Who gave the name Govinda to Krishna? Indra. But here Govardhan Lila has not happened yet. Remember, we are in the Bhoma Lila. So there is a chronological unfolding of the Lila. So it's not that everyone else already, Indra gave him the name Govinda, so we can call him Govinda. So at this point, the Acharyas comment, Govinda doesn't mean that. It's not in connection to Indra's giving that name to Krishna, as it happens after the Govardhan Lila. But Govinda also can mean superintendent of cows. No? Like in connection to one of the meanings of the name, he who gives pleasure to the cows. Interestingly, also Govinda is a name not for Krishna in Vrindavan, but for God, Narayan, in Vrindavan, which is employed in the Bhagavatam. For example, in verse 25, 6, chapter of 10th canto, it is described that Yashoda, after Krishna killed, I don't remember which demon, maybe Putana, Yashoda immediately starts to invoke different names of Bhagavan to invoke protection and blessings on her child. And one of them is Govinda. Om Keshavaya Namah, Om Narayanaya Namah, Om Madhavaya, Om Govindaya Namah, Om Vishnuvaya Namah, Om Madhavaya, all these names. So again, Govinda is not necessarily a name for Krishna in Vrindavan, a Brajavasi name, but can be a name for Bhagavan, Hari. But also Govinda, as we know, means he who gives pleasure to Go. And Go, of course, can mean so many things. But for the Brajavasis, means everything that starts with Go in Vrindavan. No? So he who gives pleasure to, of course, Go as the cows, but he who gives pleasure to Go Vardhan, he who gives pleasure to Go Kul, he who gives pleasure to Gopis. Of course, they are speaking this verse, so ultimately the implication is Govinda Venum. He's playing this flute, and by doing so, he's giving pleasure. At the same time, of course, there is some suffering because they cannot meet, but at the same time, as they say, the sound of the flute sometimes is a mixture of nectar and poison simultaneously. You know, or like burning sugar cane, they say. You know, it's like too hot to continue drinking, but it's too sweet to stop drinking. So, dilemma. What to do? So, some words regarding the name Govinda here. Then let's go to the second part of the verse. I'll try to be a little brief, but I hope you may bear with me. Matamayura Nrityam. So after glorifying the land of Vrindavan in connection to the earth, the lotus feet of Krishna, he's playing the flute. In connection to his playing the flute, what was described? Matamayura Nrityam. The peacocks start to dance, being totally enraptured, maddened by the sound of the flute. Again, the gopis are seeing all that in the distance. From the village, they are seeing what's happening in the forest. So the peacocks, sometimes it is described, they see Krishna's pitambara, or yellow cloth, as a thunderbolt, and his sham like hue as a rain cloud. So they... And it is said that generally when a peacock sees a rain cloud, it starts to dance. It's an udipana for them in dancing. So, and when they see the clouds are lightning, his hue is the cloud. The clothes are like the lightning. Krishna's hue is like the clouds, and the flute is like thunder, basically. No? So all that combined is Krishna playing the flute in Vrindavan, and the peacocks, of course, reply accordingly. No? Start to dance, and start to dance, and start to dance. Hmm? The verse says, Venum Anu. So Venum Anu means after Anu, the venom, they start to dance. Or Sanatana Goswami also said, we could change the word. This is the magic of Sanskrit. Instead of saying Venum Anu, you can say Venu Manu. So you can put the last M of Venum and put that with the next word, which was Anu. So instead of having Venum Anu, you have Venu Manu. And Manu, it's a synonym here for mantra. So Sanatana Goswami say, the peacocks were insane because of the mantra-like sound of the flute. Like when with one mantra you can like mesmerize or hypnotize someone. So Krishna was playing his mantra flute-like sound and the peacocks were insane dancing. Or also Manu, if you continue with the idea of Venu Manu, Manu can refer to, how do you call it in English? Like the father of humanity, basically, that is famous, Manu, who is like the governor or some whatever. So the idea is basically, now the flute became is Manu. Now the flute is the governor here, is the dictator, basically. He's saying what to do, how to dance, and the peacocks are following accordingly. So it is said that fully intoxicated with prem, because remember, in Vrindavan, everyone is in that frequency. So the peacocks start to spread their tail feather, like in a very like artistic way, and start to dance with complete like abandon, you see? So Krishna is seeing that. I mean, for the peacocks, Krishna's flute is Udipana, so they start to dance. But for Krishna, the peacocks dancing is Udipana, so that is enhancing his own flute playing. So again, some other competition is starting here. So Krishna becomes more inspired to play the flute, and he's creating newer melodies and more inspired melodies by seeing the dancing of the peacocks. And in this way, Krishna and the peacocks are exchanging bhav. No? Their different ecstatic emotion, that's their mutual offering, inspiring each other to a higher, more like actualized version of experience of love and ecstasy. So this is a whole situation. Try to imagine, no? That taking place, and it's not for 5 minutes precisely. So the peacocks, by seeing Krishna becoming even more inspired, they become more inspired in their dancing. And it is at this point that the classical scene where the peacocks surrender their feathers to Krishna. No? We already spoke that lila, why how Krishna gets to have a peacock feather on his head, no? How the peacocks are presenting an offering which is an extension of their own selves to him. And remember, what is Krishna seeing in the peacock feather that is specially dear for him? Why he's keeping always that peacock feather above his head? Let's see if you heard properly the previous classes. What? What?
Radharani.
Yeah. So as we mentioned, there's the name of Sri Radha written in each peacock feather. We show some picture of how the name can be read according to Devanagari. So for Krishna, it's like a constant reminder of Radha, Radha Nam. So Krishna becomes even more delighted at this point. Now try to imagine, no? If Krishna's seen Radha Nam in each peacock feather, and at this point, hundreds and thousands of peacocks are like spreading their tails, surrendering their feathers. So he's seen thousands and millions of Radha Nams, names of Sri Radha appearing in front of him simultaneously. So you can imagine how Krishna's feeling, being Sri Radha Nam, non different from her. He's having like multiple association with Sri Radha, although they are still in Purvarak. They have not met officially in person, but that's a way to deal with that. Let me read one part from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary in this connection regarding the exchange of the peacocks and Sri Krishna. Very, very beautiful what he says. It says, in Vrindavan, the peacocks ask Krishna, Govinda, please make us dance. Thus, Krishna plays his flute. And they surround him in a circle and dance madly in time with the rhythm of his melody. So everything is totally artistic and aesthetic. And while standing in the midst of their dancing, Krishna also sings and dances. So So not only the peacocks are dancing and singing, Kika, but Krishna is dancing and singing. Then those peacocks who are fully satisfied with his flute recital, out of gratitude, offer for his pleasure their own divine feathers. In the usual manner of musicians, Krishna gladly accepts their offerings and places a peacock feather upon his turban. So he's saying, in the usual manner of musicians, sometimes you go to India, especially to an Indian concert, sometimes musicians are playing and the audience will throw, in this case, not peacock feathers, but money. Money to them. Especially if you see the Sufis doing kirtan, they have like an abhishek of bills. They're like, I mean, they are not about concerned with that. They are singing, but people is like throwing money. So it's a way of describing this same idea. Now Krishna is performing a concert and the peacocks are like doing abhishek with their own feathers. No? So Krishna is gladly taking them and decorating. Gentle animals. Now comes the other part. Remember, one thing is Krishna with the peacocks, and then the rest of the animals seeing such a situation from the top of the hill. So gentle animals such as deer and doves also greatly relish Krishna's transcendental performance. And to get a good view, they flock to the peaks of hills. No? They have to go a good vantage point to appreciate that. Then, as they watch the breathtaking program consisting of a triad of song, dance, and music, they become numb, out of place. So that's the description of the remaining. Now, Krishna and the peacocks are still dancing and moving, but the rest of the audience is totally flabbergasted. They cannot pronounce a word. They are taking the privileged seat of the top of the hills. And all this has to do with the last line of the verse. We are seeing that. So this is the scene that is described. These animals are going to the, for example, Govardhan. Many acharyas describe when here they say hills, it has to do with Govardhan. So they go to these peaks so they can have unobstructed vision of Krishna and so on. So everyone else, apart from the peacocks here and Krishna, is sitting like motionless, totally absorbed in the performance, basically. So we have this interesting like combination, no? The two of them equally ecstatic, if you will. On one side we have the peacocks being totally maddened, intoxicated, dancing and singing, moving a lot with Krishna, and on the other side we have other species totally maddened and intoxicated, but in a passive way, just not being able to move. But the two of them are two sides of the same coin of ecstasy. Or like when Mahaprabhu, or what Jiva Goswami mentions in that connection, that by the sound of the flute, the peacocks danced and the wild animals became civilized. The peacock generally is seen as a more civilized animal, more aristocratic with the feather, but now was acting in a rather uncivilized way, like dancing and like mad, like drunk. And all the other species that were known as wild now became civilized, like seated in on their seats and without doing any mess. So both are expressions of ecstasy. Due to ecstasy, some move. Due to ecstasy, some won't move. That happened with Mahaprabhu when he, for example, arrived to Jagannath Puri for the first time. He was walking on the path to Jagannath Puri, and at the distance he contemplated the dome of the Sri Mandir, the main dome in the temple with the chakra and the flag, which is non different from having direct darshan of three Jagannath. And Mahaprabhu in ecstasy started to shout Jai Jagannath and started to run straight to give an embrace to Jagannath in Radhabhav. So he's running out of ecstasy. So out of ecstasy, because generally you won't see, I mean, people just running into the temple and wanting to embrace the deity. I mean, it's not the standard. It's not in the Archana Padati. No? When you enter the temple, just run like mad and embrace it. Of course, when Bhava is there, as Guru Maharaj will say, it's not that you are not following the rules, not because you don't want, but because you cannot. Because Bhava is overflowing and just you cannot follow the rules. Not because you don't like them, but just because something else is pushing. So Mahaprabhu, out of ecstasy, is just running and shouting. But it is said that before reaching Jagannath and embracing him, out of ecstasy, he falls in the swoon and stops moving. So out of ecstasy, he ran. Out of ecstasy, he stopped running. Out of ecstasy, he moved and do a lot of things. And out of other type of ecstasy, totally collapsed. So something similar here. No? Out of ecstasy, the peacocks are moving and dancing. Out of ecstasy, some other species are like, that's called stamba, which means not moving, basically paralysis, you say? Yeah. And Sanatana Goswami says the following. Let me share this with you. He says, the peacocks too are included by the word samasta, which is a word in the verse. Because samasta generally refers to all the other living entities apart from the peacocks. But here Sanatana puts the peacocks in the group also, of the stunned ones. So how to understand that? So he says, at first the peacocks were dancing due to being excited from the bliss of seeing the Lord, and subsequently because of the sound of the flute. They experience a swoon of prem, a swoon characterized by the cessation of everything other than hearing his flute and looking at him, as in the case of the other living entities. So it is, according to Sanatana Goswami, the peacocks eventually joined the paralyzed gang, if you will, and just remained hearing the flute and looking at Krishna. Those were the two functions, totally absorbing those two directions, which is more than enough for sure. No? Some words more before finishing, with your permission. We have the word praksha. Praksha in this verse, which we translated as after seeing, or also can be translated as worth seeing. So worth seeing, if you take praksha as worth seeing, our acharyas will apply praksha to basically all the other words of the verse. Again, that's the magic of Sanskrit. So praksha is not only mentioning, I don't know, it was worth seeing Krishna. No, the peacocks were worth seeing with Krishna. The animals stand were worth seeing with Krishna. The land of Vrindavan is worth seeing. The footprints of Krishna in Vrindavan are worth seeing. And so that's how Sanskrit creates this magic, that one single word is qualifying all the other words in the verse. It is said that from the vantage point of the hill's top, the animals at one point were not able to see Krishna before reaching the top, because Krishna was kind of covered and surrounded by all the feathers from the tails from the peacocks. And that's why some acharyas mentioned they went to the top of the hill, because on other height, Krishna was totally enveloped by the feathers of the peacocks. So they could not see Krishna. They were just seeing like a sea of peacock feathers. So they wanted to see that, but they also wanted to see Krishna in the center. So they went to the top of the mountains, and from there, okay, full darshan there, no? And of course, when the gopis are saying this, remember, they are going through all these experiences as well. When they see, when seeing such a thing, everyone in Vrindavan became stunned. Well, they are part of everyone in Vrindavan. No? So they will say that, and they, end of the verse. Now, that's the end of the verse here. Everyone became stunned. The gopi who was speaking this verse choked up, no more verse. Now we have eventually to go to the next one. So in this way, if we go back to the idea that Lalita Sakhi is speaking this verse to console Sri Radha, again, she's trying to say, forget about the flute from the previous verse and try to concentrate about all these wonderful things happening in Vrindavan, whose queen is none other than you. So you are the queen of such a marvelous place. So do not die because of the flute. Look all the other things that are in your kingdom. Oh, so many. So in this way, as usual, the gopis are seeing all this through the lens of their own emotions. Now, this Venu Gita is a lot about that, of projecting the bhav also. The gopis are having their hearts inundated, as we mentioned, with the sanctuary bhavs, transitory emotions of dainya, humility, or nirbheda. Nirbheda will mean like, how is it in English? Self-contempt? Something like that. So it is said that in this connection, the gopis will lament, transcendentally. For example, one commentator say that, another way of paraphrasing this verse, one gopi declares, seeing Govinda and hearing his Venu Nad, the sound of his flute, even hard stones and rocks melt and become clearly imprinted with Shyam Sundar's most beautiful tender footprints. But what more can I tell you, Sakhi? Our hearts are so hard that even after hearing the Venu Nad, nothing changes in them. We worship the peacocks because of their good fortune at every moment. The domestic animals in the house are worthy of worship. So that's how the gopis are feeling. No? Even our pet animals and every other species in Braj, they are worthy of our worship. Remember, they are not thinking, we are the highest devotee, everyone should worship us, here we are. They are thinking, everyone is worshipful for us, and everyone is a devotee except for us. So again, in this verse, the gopis ecstatically will say, when the Creator will bless us with the same good fortune that the land of Vrindavan is having, always adorning her chest with Krishna's lotus feet. Again, the gopis would like to have Krishna's feet on their hearts. That's their longing. Eventually that will come true, but here we are in Purvarak. They are building in that connection. So the gopis will say, we are totally bereft of auspiciousness. The peacocks are dancing with Krishna. And again, what do the gopis want? To dance with Krishna. No? They are offering themselves to Krishna in the form of feathers. What do the gopis want? To offer themselves to Krishna in every single function that accompanies them. And even the gopis say, not only the peacocks are dancing with Krishna, the peacocks and the, what is pihen? The pihens, the couple, the two of them are dancing for Krishna. Why we can do that the same thing? Why cannot we come with our husbands just running after the sound of the flute? Say, no, we are totally damned because our husbands are vehemently opposed to that. It's not that we say, hey, dear husband, let's go with Krishna. He's calling us. I say, what are you saying? But they are saying, oh, but the peacock and the pihen are doing that. And they will see along the verses different species going in couples, no, towards Krishna, or like the niceness of heaven. Not only the devis, but the devas developing even female sensibilities when hearing the flute, they say. And the two of them are attracted. Our husbands are not supporting us in that level. We are so damned. They say the trees, creepers, deer, and those, even all the birds and animals can go close to Krishna. But not even for an instant do we have the good fortune to be with him and lovingly hold his lotus feet to our breasts. We are so powerless. Only when we die and take birth in another species in Vrindavan will we be able to get Krishna's association. Only when then will our lives take on some meaning. To try to conceive the depth and the dimension of this idea. And for them, we cannot have Krishna's association. The only thing we can think is when we will die and take a proper birth that will allow that association. Because what's the meaning of being alive without being associated with Krishna? Better we die and we take birth in whatever forms will help that to happen. So that's the psychology of the gopis. I mean, it makes no... Especially if you are in a place where everyone else is having Krishna's association, except for you. I mean, try to imagine that, the contrast. Of course, eventually the gopis will have that association. There won't be a need for anyone to die. But we have to die on another level, and we know. No? First maranam, then smaranam, as we say yesterday. The death of the ego, the days of all these different layers. Like when Krishna played the flute in Rasa Lila, and it is said some gopis were not able to join immediately, and they have to burn to die to some layers of ego. Not to die literally, because the whole Lila will be a tragedy. No? Well, one gopi died in Rasa Lila, there's no more celebration there. I mean, someone died on the way. But they had to die to certain internal obstacles that were not allowing them to fully go there. So this is the spirit of the gopis here in Purvarak. Everything is meeting Krishna except for us. So what's the purpose of continuing with this? Let's try to take a birth that will facilitate that, because if not, what's the meaning of continuing alive, basically? Life is meant for serving him, loving him, basically. And let's go to the last, very last words of the verse, and with this I'm finishing. Avara tanya samasta sattvam. We generally translate it as other living beings were stunned. We already gave that general explanation, but Sanatan Goswami, interestingly, shed some light saying that the word avarata, which means stunned, refers to abolishing the moods of passion and ignorance. Rajaguna, tamaguna, and by extension also sattvaguna. And he means that only in the absence of those can samasta sattvam, which he compares with Vishuddha sattvam. Vishuddha sattvam is another name for transcendence, for the transcendental plane, nirgun plane, sometimes called Vasudeva plane. So in other words, he's saying only for when one is free from the influence of the gunas, you can enter Vishuddha sattva, and implying with that, the gopis are there. Even though they seem, you can say, oh, they're totally tamasic, just crying and lamenting, that's tamaguna. Or they're full of desire, rajaguna. But Sanatana Goswami said, no, samasta sattva means they are fully situated in Vishuddha sattva, which means transcendental platform without the tinge of mundanality. Not only the gopis, of course, not the peacocks, every single species in Braj. Although, again, they express about themselves humbly. So that's important to understand. And whatever, again, the gopis are expressing here, or seeing in others, whatever they're seeing in the other species, that's happening to those species, but also that's happening in a unique way in themselves. Again, they would like to dance with Krishna. They would like to have Krishna's feet on their chest. As he's putting that on Vrindavan, that's happening, and the peacocks are dancing with Krishna, that's happening. But in every single thing they are seeing in others, actually they are seeing themselves doing that with Krishna. That's their longing in a unique way in the context of their romantic love for him. And throughout the Benu Gita, we'll see in every verse that same pattern will be there. They will be appreciating something in some species in Braj, and that's happening, but also they are seeing themselves engaging in that with Krishna in their own unique way as part of their longing. And all that, of course, will make that happen eventually. So that all this Benu Gita also shows how if you want to, I don't know, to give an example, to have Rasa Lila with Krishna, first you have to have this intense, deep desire when you are already absorbed in thinking about all those things. It's not that, I do not care for that and suddenly I'm in Rasa Lila or whatever. But before actualization of the whole thing, there has to be intense longing and hankering. So we as sadhakas also need to gradually, in a realistic way, but as Guru Maharaj will say, sadhana bhakti bhava bhakti. First saranagati, humility in sadhana, and as we advance, longing. A specific longing, and that longing will, again, be actualized and will take us to eventual union with Krishna, whatever relationship we hanker for. It won't happen like out of nothing. Like, oh, now I'm Golok Vrindavan, so what am I supposed to do here? I will ask here the guys, they will tell me. No, I mean, you have to be burning in longing, and already that burning and longing will inform all of your movements there, basically. So these sections previous to the Rasa Lila are showing that. Yeah, the gopis are there in Rasa Lila, but before that, separation, humility, surrender, longing, appreciation of everyone else, in such a degree that the natural result in which Krishna will reciprocate with that will be the highest form of union and so on. So, we'll leave it here today, and in the next verse, I don't know, tomorrow? I don't know when. I think tomorrow, yeah. The gopis will direct their attention to the good fortune of the deer. So we will go to the deers tomorrow. The deers. Jai Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Venu Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman.